As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
How's it going, everybody? It's Sandy McCullough from The Athletic here on The Athletic Baseball Show. I am here with Evan Drellick. It is early Wednesday morning here in Houston, where the Atlanta Braves have won their first World Series since 1995. Evan, what do you got? What do you think of this series, huh?
Well, on the Braves front, I don't think we've seen a team like this since, what, the 06 Cardinals?
Yeah, similar, yeah.
There hasn't been a team that
where their record seems so distant from how good they actually were.
Right. What's impressed me about the Braves, maybe I guess you can't say in comparison to the Cardinals, but they seemed like a much better team than an 88 win team.
Really?
I mean, it didn't stop, right? When they beat the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I remember talking to some Astros people, and you know, one person thought this is not somebody. This is somebody in their media circle, not somebody with the team, but just somebody I know. They said, you know, I think there's a chance the Astros make this a bloodbath. You know, end this pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have been surprised by that. And it like you kept waiting for the other shoe to drop with the Braves, and it never did.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would have picked the Astros in six. I think, and that is not so much a slight to the Braves, who I think, you know, having covered all of the NLCS and having watched these guys for like 2 weeks now, I do think that by the end, with all the Dodgers' injuries, the Braves were just a better team than the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers won 105, you know, and they had, or 106 or whatever it was, they had all the star power. Atlanta's a really good team, and I think that the fact that they don't have like an elite sort of skill in anything, right? They don't have an elite like offense. They don't really have an elite rotation. They don't really have an elite bullpen. You could see the flaws pretty easily, but what you couldn't see was the strengths. And the strengths are that, like, one, you have Freddie Freeman, right? So you have one of the best players in baseball, first base. But also, you have a lineup that does not quit. Every hitter in their lineup was at least league average or better. And you know, they had a couple of guys get hot at the right time. Jorge Soler, I think, actually, I just got a text. His ball just landed. In the third inning. That was just a terrifying display of power. They got a good effort from Max Fried, who's been one of the best pitchers in baseball since August. Tyler Matzek has, you know, become like left-handed Wade Davis or whatever. And they're the world champions.
When you have a team like that, even those 06 Cardinals, it felt like they stole something. Like the Mets were supposed to and it was seven games in that NLCS in 06. Yeah. This didn't come down to the LCS won six games, right?
Yeah, they straight up beat teams that had better records.
Right.
They played better. And like again, if you look at how they played after August 1st, which was the day after Alex Anthopoulos went out and got Adam Duvall, Eddie Rosario, and Jorge Soler, when he got those three guys, after August 1st, they played like a 105-win team. I mean, this was a really good club. And, you know, frankly, I feel like kind of an idiot because going into the postseason, I was like, yeah, the Braves aren't very good. You know, like it's not that they're not very good, but it's just you kind of see all the flaws, right? You see like, they got all these guys who like have 110 OPS pluses. Like, really? But when you have guys who can hit the ball out of the park with 110 OPS plus, that plays.
On the Astros side, you know, Brent Strom, the pitching coach, said he's not coming back to the Astros next year. And he was talking about the Braves and just acknowledged that they were flat out beat. And so the sense, even on the Houston side, seems to be that 19 was really the more painful one. That of the two World Series losses, even though a lot has happened with Houston over the last couple of years, and I think this is its own brand of pain, there's an acknowledgement that the Braves deserve to win. That nothing was ripped away from the Astros here.
That's interesting. I'm just trying to think back now. I mean, the thing about that Washington team was that they had like eight good players, but it was like eight really good players, you know, like elite starting pitching, Anthony Rendon, Juan Soto, Trey Turner, Daniel Hudson, and Sean Doolittle. And that was kind of it. Whereas everyone kind of played well.
Well, and the Astros, and at that point, Granke was still there, Verlander still there, Cole's still there, Springer's still there.
And the offense was up and running in a way that it was just not. That was weird.
In a way, this World Series, I don't know. I feel like the 19 World Series, even last year's World Series, might have had a little more juice. This never felt really intense to me. Maybe outside of Game 5, the fact that the Astros were able to come back.
Yeah.
But that might have just been my vantage point.
There were certainly times covering this World Series where it felt like I was watching the worst DS. I got assigned to the worst. I drew the bad. But that's, you know, whatever. I mean, like, I think the matchup could have been a little sexier. It certainly wasn't easy to watch for TV viewers given the time of game, given the late starts. I mean, I think there's a lot of issues there.
You're a former West Coast guy. Isn't there a competing theory that the start times, it's more of an East Coast bias, that those of us on the East Coast have a problem with it, but if you're on the West Coast for these start times, it's not as bad.
I don't think anything that is a four-hour TV show that isn't riveting at every second is a good idea. I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't really have solutions, and I'm frankly, like, I don't care. It's not my job to fix it, you know? Like, I just kind of write about...
No, we're writers. We find the problem. We don't find the solution.
Well, yeah, the problem is that the games are boring and they take too long. So, good luck. What?
Go figure it out.
Well, it's not my job to figure. You know, whatever. That's what the money's for all them. That's what they pay. So, where do the Houston Astros go from here? You obviously covered the Astros in another lifetime. You've written, you know, a few stories about them over the years at The Athletic. I guess, like, I'm still sort of working through this on deadline, kind of like the legacy of this group, right? Because Carlos Correa, there's a good chance he might leave in free agency. George Springer's already gone. There's obviously the taint of 2017. They don't have that second ring to sort of show people and say, like, hey, you know, we were a legitimately great team. I think everyone can acknowledge that they are a legitimately great team, but there's something missing from their resume.
Yeah, and it seems to really only come up once in the post-game interviews, but at least to me, I would imagine, I would just guess, and it is just speculation, that to the players in the room too, they knew that if they had won, at least those guys who had been around in 2017, the individual legacies of Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, hell, even a Marwin Gonzalez, would look better if they could say, well, we did it in Houston and we did it again with that same core players. And, you know, assuming a few years later there were no cheating allegations, I don't think there's any way around that they would have wanted that and that probably would have helped their own individual legacies. I don't think it changed in no way, obviously, does it change what happened in 2017.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, each one of those guys probably, I don't want to say needs to get a ring somewhere else, but I don't think it's unimportant for their careers to have a ring that's not tainted.
Yeah, and it's sort of like it's a way – it doesn't redeem them for 2017. And to their credit, right, they've never said that that's what they're trying to do. They've sort of actually said specifically, like, stop asking about this. You know, like, right. We're not – like, you guys are the ones obsessed with 2017. I think that – I mean, not to get too psychoanalytical, but that feels like defense mechanism-y, I guess. But ballplayers are also so blinkered that, like, maybe it's true. You know, like, ballplayers don't think about the world the way sports fans do. That's part of the reason why they get to do this. I don't think it would have redeemed them. I don't think it would have changed what happened in 2017. I don't think it would have changed the way that they're received on the road in the future. But at the very least, adds a line on the resume to remember them as something other than the guys with the trash can.
in a way, it also would have underscored the tragedy of 17 more, where,
yeah,
well, clearly if they'd won again here, as we know, they were good enough to win.
Right.
But it shows you kind of how sad it is that, like, yeah, they could have had two World Series in 5 years if they won. And what a damn shame that, you know, something that starts to approach a dynasty,
right,
had to have the proverbial asterisk next to it, right, if you so choose to affix one.
Right.
Yeah, there's no absolution to be had for, right, for that group.
Right. And they didn't seek that. I mean, at least unless, you know, you've read something, you know, that I haven't. I don't think they've never said, like, we need this to, you know, cleanse ourselves for what we did. I think they just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can understand how it gets grating for them to have to, yeah, continuously deal with it. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have to continuously deal, yeah, with it. You can understand how they would feel, yes, about it. And, you know, if Correa now walks, in a way, the lesson of the Braves is, well, a lesser Astros team could still wind up back in a sixth, yeah, straight ALCS. Yeah. You know, they're not done necessarily, right, at this point, but it's pretty damn rare to make it back to back World Series. I mean, yeah, the Dodgers do it, but like.
But the Dodgers are also approaching the precipice of kind of ending an era, I think.
Well, the Astros, to an extent, are too.
Yeah.
I mean, Altuve's, yeah, here, but it's a very new group compared to 17, which isn't surprising, but, mm-hmm, it's. You know, at some point, you do wonder, when do the Astros retool? It's not yet, probably, but you're near the end of a cycle here.
Yeah, and well, what is interesting to me is, you know, you bring up, like, the Braves, right? They won 88 games, but they were obviously a little bit better than that. It does show that there is a way to build a championship team that doesn't require, you know, a $200 million payroll, and that is always a problematic example to set. And it's not because, you know, that Alex Anthopoulos didn't want to spend money. They did spend money. They signed Marcelo Ozuna, and that contract backfired almost immediately, you know, when he was arrested for, you know, domestic violence and is probably unlikely to play for the Braves. But, you know, when that was their big expenditure, like, they cut Adam Duvall. He was on the team last year. They cut him. And then they traded for him at the deadline. So they got him back for cheaper. I
Right.
You sometimes worry about, like, what, you know, I don't know.
Well, I think the model for being cheap and winning is out there already with the Rays, right? I mean, yeah, even the Astros, the roster, their roster has gotten more expensive over time. It's not piddling anymore.
Right.
But they do avoid free agency. You know, right, the money they've given out has been through extensions prior to free, right, agency. I almost look to the deadline. You know, you see the analytics.
Maybe it's a good thing then. Maybe the Braves are a good thing.
Well, I think in a way it could coax out some of the very analytically new age,
yeah,
driven GMs into being slightly less risk averse,
yeah,
and going for it, right? And that's, yeah, what makes, like, in the highest level, an entertaining product. Like, yeah, when you have a team that says, I'm going into the deadline, that's, yeah, compelling. And that's what you want when you're selling a product, so, and that's what they seem to always forget.
Here's my counter, and I know you don't watch baseball.
No.
But I technically do. I have no idea who the Braves traded to get Jock Peterson, Jorge Soler, Eddie Rosario, and Adam Duvall, right?
Sure.
I can tell you who the Dodgers traded to get Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, because they gave up real prospect capital. And I wonder if the example set is like, hey, let's get all these sort of like upside plays. And that, because I don't think anyone looked at what the Braves did at the deadline and said, like, wow, Braves are going for it. It was kind of like, yeah, you know, Alex Anthopoulos, like, you know, was sending a lot of emails and, you know, buying in bulk. And I, you know, I think that is an interesting strategy, and obviously it is effective. But it would, you know, you do think about if teams will be, it's always difficult when teams are incentivized to race to the middle, I guess. And that's, the Braves are a little different. You know, I don't want to, like, hold them up as a, they're very different, I think, than teams who are sort of exploitative in some of these factors. But it'll, I don't know.
I think
it's
teams
late,
have man. Been
it's late at night.
Teams have been sitting there going, unless we really have a good chance. Like, usually, yes, the middling team doesn't,
right, no, like,
make
the Phillies,
push.
The Phillies, you know, under Matt Klentak would be like, you know, there was always that sort of, you know, why are we trying to get into the wild card game?
Right.
You know.
Right. It's, like, risk, yeah, averse. It's uninteresting.
Yeah.
And I would hope the Braves show other GMs and shake out a little bit of a different type of behavior that, like, yeah, no, you don't have to give up the farm, as you point out. Right. You don't have to give up your absolute best. You don't have to go get barn burners, but it can be worth going for it. And that this is, kind of goes back to the beginning of the conversation. Like, since the 06 Cardinals, there isn't a great example of a team like that where it's actually paid off that, you know, you don't have the best roster or anywhere even close to it on paper for the 162 game stretch. And there's a reward at the end, you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
What's your column going to be about?
I'm going to write about the Astros. I'm trying to – I think they're challenging to write about, I'll be honest. As you know, having covered them. And it's not even an issue of sort of access. It's just that I think that the sporting public very much wanted them to play the villains, and they sort of refused to do it. You know, they refused to, like, wear the black hat. And outside of Carlos...
Well, what did you want? What did you want, like, Correa to, like, take the field carrying a garbage can? What would have been made them the heel?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like, coming out and saying, yeah, we did it. There's nothing you can do about it. And we're going to kick your ass this year. Right? Like, that's what the pro wrestling fan in you wants. Because that's entertaining. Right? And you know, we're not even talking about, like, the, you know, the moral of the game. Baseball, like, but that would have been more entertaining. And Correa was really the only one who ever really kind of puffed out his chest and, you know, said something to the effect of, like, what are people going to say now? He said that last year, right? Like, you know, what are people going to say now? But even that, to me, it always seemed like it came more from a place of, like, he felt bad that everyone hated the team, you know? And, like, it seemed clear that the reception, you know, really shrunk Bregman and Altuve, and Correa sort of stepped into the void. And now Correa may go play elsewhere. And so it leaves the Astros as kind of this, like, I don't know.
What could have been feels like a little bit of a shame. It's too bad. It's kind of loose ends that haven't exactly been tied up.
There's a lack of closure, I think, on the story, right? And I think that, you know, and it also becomes a point of, like, all right, when should we in the press stop talking about 2017 when you talk about the Houston Astros?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's chicken and the egg. Do you want the press to respond to the public, the fan, the consumer of our media and kind of give them what they want? It's a good end to it.
Well, but it depends on who the consumer is, right? Because if it's an Astros fan, right? Like, I know that if I write this column, Astros fans are going to hate it, right? And I know that if not Astros fans, they're going to hate it because it's about the Astros.
But, you know, like,
who they don't like, you know, it's just hard to, you know, nuance.
Someone wrote, Houston local media and probably multiple outlets wrote about Manfred getting booed prior to game one on the few standing right in front of the Astros dugout, and fans are just, you know, heckling him.
Uh-huh.
Open the letter. What was the other thing they said?
The
Yankees letter. you made us a scapegoat, you know, just
letter.
You know, going after Manfred, like, that story, at least on one of the local media's websites, was incredibly well read, right? So from a certain angle, Astros fans have eaten it up. I'm not saying they would prefer to have a team that had cheated, but, like, there is also a rallying around the team and a, I don't know, voyeurism or just kind of, they have their own attraction to the spectacle of it, right? Yeah. Like, they don't care about Rob Manfred if it's not for the sign-stealing scandal. And clearly, they're clicking on that story.
Huh. So what do you think the answer is? Like, when, you know, as someone who's theoretically writing a book about the Astros, right? Like, when is the time to stop bringing this up?
When these guys are gone, in the next few years, as more players dissipate here, right? Like,
so when it's like just Altuve in the last year,
it'll start to fade. But you're still gonna have fans who are gonna heckle the people.
That's not the question, right? Like, what's it? Robinson Cano was still getting booed in Kansas City in 2015 for something that happened at the 2012 All-Star game. You know, like, fans have a long memory, and that's why the whole product stays in business, right? But it's like, okay, so Correa, if Correa is elsewhere, right? Springer, right, was a huge part of the 2017 Astros. He's gone, okay? Correa might be gone. So then it's like, when you talk about Bregman, you talk about Altuve, you know, is it just, it has to be part of the cover? I don't know the answer. I mean, I think probably in some way it does, but it's also like you're just repeating a point that everyone knows.
You know, I don't want to be too precious about it, but it does strike me that there is something. We know that what the Astros did was egregious, but there's something about what they did that lingers with people more than most of this stuff. And then so you can kind of start to reverse engineer, well, why is that? Why do we – I mean, PEDs people were talking about, but that's not organized team behavior.
Uh-huh.
So like there's clearly a lasting impact of the idea that a team would have the gall to try to cheat so brazenly off the field, right? There's some combination of the action that they undertook that – resonates, right? Like, why are we sitting here discussing about closure? And I think it has to go back to the nature of what they did. It clearly unsettles people.
I think it's the imagery, right? It's like, it's the, you know, the Mike Bolsingers of the world who, you know, look, Mike Bolsinger probably wasn't going to be in the big leagues for much longer, but, you know, like, he was knocked out, you know, his last outing was against the Astros. I mean, it's the thought of Clayton Kershaw in the dugout in game five. I mean, just the, you know, the sort of haunted look, you know, when he got zero swings and misses or whatever it was on his off speed stuff. I mean, I think that's what it is because fans remember that and they remember, you know, how loud this place was and they remember how scary that lineup was and they remember the way that players were kind of smirk. I remember watching it at the time when Carlos Beltran's interview after game seven in LA. You know, he was on the air with, like, David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez and Keith Hernandez and, you know, on the Fox thing. And they were just talking about, like, how he had inside info. And he's like, oh, I can't tell you guys what I had, you know. And it just – there was just sort of a, like, a brazenness both in action and then also in comportment to, you know, like, there would be times when guys would be at the podium and they would kind of, like, make little jokes about knowing what's coming. You know, they'd have, like, little –
like Bregman.
Yeah. I think that really stuck with people. You know, it clearly stuck with me, and I don't give a shit. You know, like, I remember all this stuff, and I don't care about the 2017 Astros. It didn't affect my life, you know?
Yeah, like, if you make the comparison...
they cost me a book deal, actually, now that I think about it.
Tell that story another day.
The Dodgers lost, and I didn't get the book
deal. That's right. That's right.
That's the story.
Well, that's the other...
That's the... Yeah, we got that one in, yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, in a, like
not I to, was the biggest financial victim.
Right,
2017.
Right, not Mike Bolsinger, you.
I should. How great would it be if I sued and they're like, yeah, we've read your stuff. You suck. No one would have bought this book.
Right. Well, but I mean, that's, you know, there's something about the formula of team wins. We write book about how team won.
Yeah.
You know where my book is kind of the anti version of that, where it's the team won, but holy cow, there's all this other stuff going on behind the scenes that people don't know, still don't know.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're so result-oriented, and that's what got the Astros in trouble. It's the exact same formula that leads the book industry and writers to write a book after every team wins a world championship is in a way the same mentality that the Astros had. It's all about the bottom line result and who gives a damn how you get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as the title of your book, was it Winning Fixes Everything?
Winning fixes everything.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of teams for a long time who really believe that, you know? And I think that there's a lot of ways in this industry that gets, you know, sort of propagated. And it's certainly true that, you know, in the wake of Moneyball, right, like every book about baseball had to be also sort of marketed as like a TED Talk to business people.
Right.
And, you know, I can, you know, leave a little Easter egg here at the end of this. Like, I have a project that I'm sort of passionate about with the 2015, 2014, 15 Royals.
You covered the Royals?
I did cover the Royals. You know,
I'd forgotten.
Someday I'd maybe like to write a book about them, but the whole idea would be it's not a TED Talk about how to – it's a story of, like, how hard it actually is to build a winner and to sustain a winner, you know, and not trying to sell the way that a team won as, like, this is the way that every team should do it. Because that's really what the story of the sport is, right? It's like, you know, you see, we were talking about this with Atlanta. You know, what are the lessons to be drawn from Atlanta? What are the lessons to be drawn from the 17 Astros and the 2020 Dodgers? You know, there's never one size fits all, but I think we in the press in the winter will be like, okay, so every team needs to copy this, you know, it's very clear that doesn't work.
Right. Well, the whole industry's copycat. It's been that way for a long time. Front offices will go over the same set of questions, right? I think in the case of the Braves, they should.
Hmm.
Because it is a departure, and I think it's a good departure for the sport. It's not necessarily that every copycat idea is a bad one. But yeah, no, you're right. That's it's been the MO for a very, very long time. Well, how are they so much smarter than everybody else?
Right.
And a lot of times, or at least a good percentage of the time, you know, it's a sport where you win 60% of you might not have actually had a secret sauce.
The dirty little secret about modern executives is, you know, while there are a lot of very intelligent people do it, they're not that smart.
If they were smart, they would have gone into a...
it's not, there's not like sort of genius. A lot of it's just like good people skills.
Or in some cases, the exact opposite.
Right. But it's not, you know, like, it's not sort of like an overabundance of brain power. Although, like, as I said, there's very, very intelligent people in this business. And then the ability to manage others and to hire well is a skill. But we sort of fetishize kind of the wrong aspects of the executive class, I think.
Yeah, for another day, we can go over the media's fetishization of everything post-Moneyball and what that helped bring about. But not tonight. Tonight we celebrate the Atlanta Braves.
Tonight... we're here to, what was it Matt Harvey said? To aid and support Qualcomm. Remember that? The Dan Patrick show? Yeah, we're here. This is all about Qualcomm. Qualcomm is not a sponsor of the Athletic Baseball Show, but thank you all for listening. It's been fun to do this during the postseason. Evan and I will probably be on various streams as the winter goes along. Evan's going to cover what should be a really fun winter for him of labor negotiations. Those always go well and are never contentious. Hey, thank you all for listening. Be sure to tune in for more baseball coverage as the week goes along. You can download the Athletic Baseball Show episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Have a good one.